Fred Film Radio, Locarno Film Festival, Switzerland.
Fred Film Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti from the Locarno Festival, the 70th edition. Today I'm in company of Adrian Brody, who's here to receive the Leopard Club Award and to talk with the audience and the press. After being so deeply connected with the characters in your films, when the movie is over, how hard is to get rid of the character?
Yeah, or dive back into your own life, which is also challenging, partially from the mental and emotional things that you have been immersing yourself in and connecting to on a not only a daily basis, but on a moment to moment for 16 hours, you know, daily. You know, you really sometimes have very little time away from that character and that character's struggle or that character's state of mind being. Obviously it changes from role to role, and the degree of immersion and the degree of suffering isn't the right word, but how much it pulls from you and takes from you in order to give to that. I was depressed for a year after The Pianist, and I don't suffer from that. And it wasn't just a depression, it was a mourning. I was mourning. I was very disturbed from what I had embraced and what it opened up, an awareness that it had opened up. That was very challenging. I also made many sacrifices in my personal life at that time to not really feel as though I had a sense of home to go back to, and the normal things that I could refer to for comfort, I got rid of. And it was all new. I was, you know, staying on friends' couches and starting life again. It was very challenging.
Would you tell us something more about that famous Oscar moment where you kissed Halle Berry? What were you thinking?
I think we were all in shock, right? That was such a beautiful moment. It was such a profound and joyous moment. There was a lot of levity with that. There's levity and love, and it was, you know, there were no problems and no, you know, it was all done in the spirit of feeling that much, first of all, relief and blessings and an actual outpouring of love in that room. I mean, it was not just an applause for, you know, your hard work and congratulations and being respectful. It was really very surprising to many, including myself. I had not won any of the previous categories. I was nominated for every award along the way. I believe the César came after that, but no American awards, SAG awards, all the awards where I thought actors would connect to and things, and so, and that I felt I had a shot at. These were all previous Oscar winners, and so it was just a good moment. So,
what do you think about the new TV series and the changing of the language in TV compared to the one in cinema?
Well, it's interesting that you reference language too within that, because as we've seen a shift in distribution models and newer outlets to distribute and lack of marketing resources for independent films and concentration of very high budget, very specific films that are being produced by the studios, there may be a lot of movies that are made, but there's less of a type of range of independent filmmaking that is made, right? And it's a shame, because all the films of the 70s were that level. They were they were great storytelling, compelling, flawed characters, wonderful narrative films that were complex, very European in sensibility. And the good news about television today is, first of all, the stigma of a film actor doing television is long gone. There used to be very separate kind of classifications. You were a television actor, it was very difficult to break into film. You were a film actor, you would often stay within film, or you would maybe delve into TV, but there was a divide. As far as narrative storytelling, in the right series, the right long form television series, there's a lot of room for an actor to develop a character, and that is very appealing to me, and to many actors. And you look at a series like Breaking Bad, you really get to see that evolution, and you see the transformation of that character and the storytelling, and then the sub characters that have led on to other shows, and also what a role like that is capable of doing for an actor's career and making a connection for someone and for an audience. The dilemma is now there's a glut of television. Now there's too many options, right, for you to watch. And so everybody's kind of running for that because there's Netflix and all these shows. They're funding. So the funding has kind of been moved into the television sector. The commitment is enormous. The beauty of doing a movie is I commit for 3 months to 6 months and fully immerse myself, and then I'm free of that character, and I like that, and I like to delve into other things in my life and other works. And there have been several offers as well to do television that I have declined as the protagonist of a show, and primarily I wasn't really sold that was the one for me to immerse myself in for ostensibly 5 to 7 years if we are successful. And the only reason to do a television series is to make it successful, not to try and do it a year or two and experiment, if that's the objective, if you want to do that. And but I'm very open to it. I just haven't encountered the right one, and I haven't created it. And maybe the time will come that I'll either be involved with development of one, of a role that really speaks to me, that's worth telling, or I will be lucky enough to be offered one that's really fantastic. I did do a guest starring role in Peaky Blinders, so I'll be in season 4 of that. And really wonderful, fun character, amazingly talented cast of actors. Steve Knight was a fantastic writer, was the creator of the show. And my involvement was limited, and I knew going into it that I could embark on this like as if I did a film and work on that and approach the other things that are meaningful to me as well. But I enjoy it, and the process is not that dissimilar to filmmaking. It's just a commitment issue, and that's very important that you want to live with that, and you want to represent that for a long time.
People often say that your life and career could be divided into what were before, what there was before The Pianist, and what happened afterwards. What do you think about this division?
Well, it's a very interesting observation. It's definitely there are many shifts in one's lifetime, many clear dividing moments. The interesting thing, what I noticed, was the transformation that happened during the making of the penis, let alone the exposure to the world almost 2 years later when the film was released, and then we received the accolades for that film. But I credit that experience with my introduction into manhood and reaffirming my values and my sense of gratitude, which may have defended me and kept me grounded after the sea of access that was offered post Academy Awards. And that was a huge shift. But there was a recognition of how I must be and who I must become as a result of, and how I must value my time here from that experience that never left me. And I think you mentioned wealth and decadence, and I feel very fortunate to, because I've been a struggling actor most of my life, and contrary to what the world believes about actors being well paid and living this lavish life, if you really look at it, there's really only a handful of privileged actors that live incredibly well or that are offered a great deal of access to many things. The majority are barely able to make ends meet from their creative work, from their compensation for their dream job. And there's always the fear that you may not work again, or you may not find enough work to sustain a living, and therefore you'll have to find other work that takes you away from acting and distracts you. So that was the biggest blessing that came from that. And, you know, it evolves, it continues to evolve, but I feel very grateful. I think, you know, that's a reminder of how dreams can come true, and how in a country like America you can come from very modest upbringings and work hard and be rewarded. And I hope that in some way that I am an example to people who dream and aspire to pursue things that are beyond their comprehension. And I haven't gotten lost in the access, if that makes sense. I feel very privileged, and I am very privileged, and I'm very respectful to the world around me, and very grateful for the achievement. And you know, I try, and I have tried. To look at my work, to take a great deal of risk and be true to an artistic path rather than succumbing to the financial gains that I could have won by following a different path that was offered. And it's not a judgment on that. It is a desire to continue to be led by my artistic pursuits. That those remain paramount to what may be accessible, that will bring some fulfillment, but not greater fulfillment.
One of our favorite movies is Summer of Sam. That is one also of your Stranger characters. What do you remember of that experience working with Spike Lee?
Well, it was a very exciting time because I knew that that role was very... It gave me a lot of ammunition, you know when you're a young aspiring actor, to have a shot at something like that is a big deal. There were a lot of very established actors that I won't name names that were after that part, and it was kind of amazing. And I auditioned several times, and I was very prepared, and it was an amazing coup to get that. And we were shooting in New York, where I'm from, and there was a vitality, especially then in that city, and with Spike, and Spike's connection to New York, and he's a force of nature. John Leguizamo was fantastic to work with, and Jennifer Esposito, who was my love interest in the film, was attractive and had her own real hunger for the work, and so we all worked so intensely. What I recall, which is interesting, which I don't know if you were at the Q&A, but I referenced how there was judgment based on a physical appearance and how we interpret that, and sometimes rightfully so, but now especially with, you know, the fears of terrorism and things that are perpetuated, and a lot of judgment comes with that, whether we like it or not, which is a shame, you know, because we're guarded and we cannot allow ourselves to view people who may have a certain religious belief or another culture to be so foreign from us because of that. And this is something that I experienced because I wasn't famous or known, and I had to shave my head. I had to have a mohawk at one point throughout the film, and I also had these crazy Liberty spikes, which were a hairstyle of the time, which were outrageous. And I was in character and wearing my chains and skulls and spikes and tight clothes that I wasn't accustomed to wearing, and hanging out on the streets in the East Village. And I literally witnessed people walk across to the other side of the street. And I witnessed people looking at me critically and differently or suspiciously. And this is New York City, where there's every walk of life. And I wasn't conscious of how people may look at me. They may judge me one way or another, but I wasn't a threat to them or so far from what was normal in society to really alert them. And now that I was, and that stuck with me, how we have to be careful for that. And that's a big part of the theme of that film, obviously.
You've been talking about those years where you were a struggling actor. Is there something that you miss of that struggle?
It's very easy to be nostalgic about all the beautiful things in the past and the things you have lost amidst the games that you've achieved. It's very easy to look back in hindsight and say, ah, that was great, and to forget a lot of the pain and the desperation that comes with living in a sea of anonymity and knowing your potential, which many people are afflicted with. And of course, looking back, being anonymous is a great luxury. It's a big loss to lose that anonymity. A lot of people who become successful really crave fame, not just attention for their work, and I appreciate that my work can move people and stay with people and entertain them and be a part of their lives, and that I'm unafraid to give that and allow access into a vulnerability and my own flaws and discover the flaws of others and represent that. But celebrity and perception of celebrity and the baggage of celebrity comes into play once you reach a certain level. And it's difficult to be prepared for what that is. And there is access to a lot, which is quite remarkable. I'm from Queens and I can socialize with royalty and it's not alarming for them. I'm not the guy in Son of Sam, and it's not even that. It's not unusual. There's a mutual appreciation of, and I think that's a huge blessing that I definitely do not overlook. And I would not ask to reverse things and go back to that struggling actor life. But there was beauty to that, and I don't forget the beauty and a simplicity, but mostly, and I tend to digress and delve into all these areas, but mostly the loss is the ability to observe others without being observed first. And as an actor, that is your key tool to be under the radar and observe others without them feeling observed, and to be able to absorb natural interactions. And that is lost when people either are enamored with you or view you as a certain way, or have a certain perception of you, or are just conscious of your presence in a different capacity than just another man on the subway. And I can still find places in the world where, and moments where I'm free of that, but I'm quite often reminded that I've had an impact on people, and but it shifts. It shifts the way you work, and you know. But there's a lot. There's a lot to immerse yourself with, and frankly, we didn't have YouTube and the internet and access to things that you can learn a great deal and be very voyeuristic at that time. I use my first-hand experiences, but there's so much research that's attainable now. And again, I wouldn't go back to it, but there's something wonderful about that. And I'm very grateful that it was a long struggle. That, you know, when The Pianist broke and became everyone's, everyone became aware of that film, I was looked upon as an overnight success. And that level of success was overnight. But there was 17 years of complete dedication to one pursuit. And I'm grateful for that, because it didn't, it really would have been way too much of a shift anytime soon.
Can you tell us something about working with Terrence Malick in The Thin Red Line?
Well, I've talked at length about that film, and there's plenty you could probably read of that experience. It wasn't the easiest experience, but it gave me a lot. It gave me a great understanding, and not to delve into it, but the role was reduced dramatically from what we had set out to do. And again, what I took from that experience, because the making of that film was profound, and I lived in the jungle. I had a boot camp for a week in the jungle where all I ate were MREs, which are military rations, and had military training and punishment for not abiding by certain rules, and I was ostracized from my group and put into a gang of Australian extras as part of an experiment that the advisors, military advisors, were doing that related to my character, and I followed everything. I did everything like a soldier, and I poured my heart out into a movie, and we worked very intensely. And then Terry made a very different movie that didn't adhere to the script. And I remember that feeling of loss, and something that most people probably couldn't understand, the level of loss. It would have been like doing The Pianist and then end up having it reduced to something very small. It was that level of a commitment. Maybe not the only leading role in film, but it was the author's persona that I portrayed, and then result became a completely different musing that Harry's entitled to make, but it was not really related to. And I remember thinking, as I played a soldier in that, that's what soldiers experience coming home and coming back to society. And no one understands what they had been through or what they had sacrificed. And that is the journey anyway. That is what I seek to get out of the portrayal of a film. So I did not receive the recognition that I had hoped for and that they were touting. But I gained a great deal of fortitude and an understanding of loss, and perhaps that sense of loss gave me insight in my portrayal of Vladislav Spielman, which came only 3 years after that. And at the time, it was very difficult to understand how that could happen because I'd worked so hard on it and was professional. But things happen. Things happen for a reason. But I remember my big takeaway was I identified to the struggle that GIs feel coming back. And that's something that's represented in Deer Hunter, De Niro's character, and coming back to society and the town, and can't really do it. So it's that wasn't the subject matter of our film, but the truth resonated with me, and the association and what I had given that was kind of taken and unappreciated is how many young men and women feel sacrificing for their country or for in the name of democracy and following the orders, and come back and they're not really appreciated for that.
Sometimes there are two different kind of actors, the one that read the script and prepare while on set and the one that get like deep into a character, working a lot on the preparation and immersing themselves. What kind of actor do you feel you are?
Well, it's such an individual process. You know, I cannot speak on behalf of what works for another actor or another painter, or anyone for that matter. You know? What's crucial for me to feel that I'm doing my work well is to do as little acting as possible. Acting is the wrong word for what I try to do. You know, it is a term for the profession and the responsibility, but it gives the wrong guidance. You're not to act like someone and mimic them and do an impression of them. Act cold to show that you're cold. You have to know what being cold is. And you have to be able to touch that again. And if you're lucky, make yourself cold. You know, I've laid in the snow when we were shooting in cold places until they called action and got back and laid in my place. You know, I put stones in my shoes when I have to limp because I want to feel that. And then I don't have to act as if I have a limp. And who cares? Because it's a small sacrifice to connect to a truth. And the connection to that truth opens up a new awareness and an emotional connection to the circumstances that the man that I am portraying is going through. And distracts me from all the wrong things. People on the crew watching, thinking about, oh, you see, I'm a little naked in this, how do I look, how do I feel? People are going to be watching it later. And none of that is to be on in your consciousness when you're working. And so I have to work very hard and isolate myself and work and do the research and know that if I'm portraying a man with a certain disability, that I understand as much as I can about that disability, that I'm not acting as if I have a disability, but spend time with people who have a certain thing and tap into the key things that touch me that are unique about that person or those people, and form a being that has those qualities. You know, I'll give you an example. In The Pianist, you know, there's this slow degradation of the character, and it's stripped from this civility and the humanity, and this kind of erosion that's a metaphor for the greater erosion we witness in whole civilization being reduced to a shell of what it once was. And what touched me was, I don't know, it was early in the rehearsal period or prior to it, and I had seen a homeless person, and whether it was from the elements and the weather, their hands were inoperable and gnarled. And I stripped away the musician's gift and sensitivity and sensibility. And from the cold and the malnutrition, at the end, if you watch the film, I restricted the movement, his manual dexterity, which was much more symbolic. And then when he had to try and play and go back to playing pieces that were effortless for him, it was a deep challenge. But had I not had that insight, and I had not done the emotional and spiritual work that comes with those associations, I couldn't have found that. And if I had not done the 4 hours a day of piano lessons and practicing for months to be able to play those pieces, I would not know about that connection to my hand and how subtle and nuanced that expression has to be. And so that's why I try to work less, because there is not, I'm really searching for the things that can do both, that can connect to a wider audience, but that can give me room for that kind of creative expression and storytelling, and to share that with people. And hopefully, whether you notice it or not, there is something that touches you about that. You don't have to notice the technique or what I did to get to that place, but it should leave you with something. It should haunt you. It should tell you that I am that person. I'm not myself, or I'm not the last character that you saw me in. And that's the beauty of what I do.
Thank you so much, Adrian Brody, in Locarno 70 to receive the Leopard Club Award. And this is Chiara Nicoletti for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.